Hello, and welcome to another edition of Kaleidoscope. This is Magda Zenon reporting from a very warm Nicosia. And with me in my virtual studio from Galilee in Israel, we have Nitzan Joy Gordon, who has set herself and her organization the auspicious task and ambitious task of creating an army of healers in the Middle East. Welcome, Nitzan.
Thank you. Thank you for having me. It's just wonderful to see you and to be here. And to I just saw some of your podcasts from the past, and I loved listening to them. So thank you.
Well, I thank you because I consider this podcasting started as a, not as a joke. It was off thrown in my lap and I just jumped into it like I always do with things. And it's turned out into be a lifeline, because I can get to connect with wonderful people and find a way to spread the word as much as I can, because I think peace building, which is my forte, my focus, my vision, is something so important, and not enough can be said, and not enough can be said about the fact that women are incredibly useful, strong, and important peace builders.
So, Exactly.
I think we're untapped. I think we pushed on the side. Not we pushed on the side. We've grown up in a world of patriarchy and guns solving problems and wars and gray men sitting at a table. And we've forgotten our humanity. And I think the woman, bringing women back into peace building or opening up spaces for women peace builders, reminds us of our humanity, which we cannot forget. So tell me a little bit about you. You are Jewish, born in Israel, grew up in the States for a while.
Yes. So I was born in a border kibbutz in Israel, and bombs were a part of my childhood. So this is 1967. We're very close to the border with Jordan, and they're attacking our kibbutz, and we, the children, are going underneath into ground shelter, underground shelters, and there's a lot of fear. There was fear throughout my childhood, but that moment was very scary, especially because some of the kibbutz members defending the kibbutz where I lived were killed, and one of them was the father of one of my friends, and she was 5 years old, I think, when her father was killed. And some of the other parents were very badly wounded. So this is like my childhood. And my father, who was the only officer in the kibbutz, he comes to me to visit me in the underground shelter. And I say to him in the middle of the war, "Daddy, why are the Arabs shooting at us? Are they bad people?" And he says, "Well, you know, there's good Arabs and bad Arabs, like there's good Jews and bad Jews." He's trying to explain to a seven-year-old in the middle of a war. So the ones that are shooting at us may be bad, but there's ones who, just like us, want to live in peace. And I'm like, can't you make this more like black and white so I can understand? Why is this? What's this complexity, you know, good on every side, whatever? But I think that really kind of began my path of seeing that there's no one side. There's no one side here.
And I think my father did the similar thing. It's also recognizing that it's not, there's no one side, but people, you can't put people in little boxes of Arab or Jew. I grew up in apartheid South Africa, and you can't put in black and white. You've got to look at the human being.
Exactly. And then I found myself, my father went to do his PhD, so I found myself in Chattanooga, Tennessee, where he was doing his PhD in Nashville.
And we in the actually, Deep South. You went to the Deep South.
Deep South, and we lived in a Signal Mountain, Tennessee. I'm the only Jew in this junior high school. And I get teased every day And one day the children even say, like the teacher is talking about the Holocaust. And the children say to me, two children, they're sitting next to me, too bad all the Jews were not murdered in the Holocaust. Too bad you were not murdered. And they keep saying and keep saying it. And I'm like, my whole body is like reacting. And at one point I just jump up and say, scream, enough. And I run out of the room. And I
How did the teacher react?
Well, I don't know. I wasn't there to see what happened. I came home and I finally, like, this has been going on for a year, the teasing, not that extreme, but calling me a dirty Jew and throwing little rocks at me on the way home. So I finally tell my parents about this. Like, I don't know why I didn't tell them before. It was like, maybe because I grew up in a kibbutz, not with my parents. But anyway, I finally told them, and my father came the next day to the class. I think the teacher invited him, and I didn't know what he was going to do, how he was going to react to this thing that happened. And he just stood in front of the class. He told two stories of courage from the Holocaust. One of them I still remember. And then he thanked all the children for listening to him, and he left the room.
No peacemaker, your dad. He went in with gentleness. He didn't go in with anger or resentment or revenge.
Yeah, that was pretty amazing. So I think then the teasing somewhat stopped, and I don't know exactly what caused it. But that was a special moment in my life. And afterwards, when I did my master's, dancing really helped me during this whole period express my feelings. And so I went to study, do a master's in dance therapy, and I wrote a PhD on prejudice that I had experienced and others experienced all over the world, and how, what is prejudice? Why is there prejudice? What makes people behave in prejudiced ways towards one another? And then how can we heal it? How can we understand it? And how can we heal it? And
I mean, we've all grown up, growing up in apartheid South Africa, prejudice was part of your daily life.
Yeah.
And it took me a long time after leaving South Africa to realize that as much as I was a woke person and I was in the anti-apartheid movement, the narrative, the public narrative was part of me. And it took me a conscious effort to get rid of words we used to use inadvertently that was part of this narrative that blacks were lesser humans or the whites were better humans. It's terrifying. And you know, it's terrifying because I was conscious. What happens to those people that just swallow it and absorb it inadvertently? And that's where the prejudice continues. Anyway, continue.
Yes,
I find this very...
You're absolutely right. If you want, I can talk about it in more depth. But in any case, during the first Intifada, after doing my master's degree, I returned to Israel and I wanted to do something for coexistence and peace. And after a couple of years, I met a Muslim woman and I started working with her. She had a school for kindergarten teachers. And I started working Arab kindergarten teachers. And I started working with her, teaching them dance therapy as a way to help the children become more flexible and help them become more flexible in their thinking. Prejudice, rigid, movement, dance, more flexibility in the body, which causes more flexibility in the mind.
And using dance meant you didn't need the words, you just needed the movements.
Yes.
Which means you can transcend the language barrier.
Exactly. And afterwards, after we move together, what happens when you move, this is dance therapy, is that emotions are in our bodies. They're not only in our minds, they're in our hearts, they're in our gut. We talk about emotions in this way. So emotions are in the body. And when you begin to move, the emotions begin to emerge.
Yep.
And then we taught them to listen in a way that's healing. I taught them. Listening partnerships, we called it. It comes from co-counseling. And so people could talk about their deepest pain, what they're afraid of, whatever, and really be seen and acknowledged in a way that they never experienced before. Usually when people listen to each other, they immediately remember something and begin sharing their own stories and give you suggestions and what you should do. I had the same situation happen to me. This is what worked for me. And just to sit and listen.
Active listening is such a lost art, because most of us listen to respond. We don't listen to listen. So yeah. We're not absorbing the story or the narrative that's been told to us. We actually, as you said, we're listening to respond, to identify, to connect from within us. So it's really a lost art, active listening.
And it's one of the most needed resources in the world to really... Naomi Remen talks about it, that the listening, it's not our words, it's not our, it's just be there and see this human who's sitting in front of you, who has gone through so much, who has struggled so much, who every day is trying to do their best. Just see them for a moment, be with them. And then we switch, and then they are there for you. And so it's listening partnerships. And in Israel, this particular skill is so important, because it's especially now, but living here, Israel, Palestine, the land, it's like living somewhat in an emergency room. Every day something happens. Everything... You know, 5 times a day, I get triggered by things that I see, by bombs that are falling, by this, by that. And so let's say, okay, before I say that, I want to say that our work in Israel, in the Army of Healers, in the organization Together Beyond Words, is based on 7 words that we believe in. And they are pain that is not transformed is transmitted. Pain that is not transformed is transmitted. And so if we don't want people to act out their traumas, to act out their pain in the world, we need to create a space where they can feel what is theirs to feel and move to a place where they're coming back to their compassion, coming back to their connection to others. That's what we need to do, create such spaces of transformation and healing. So
I think what we need to, I think because I'm in a different space but doing similar work, because we're trying to create a Truth and Reconciliation Commission. And I think the whole idea is that people need a space to tell their story. And once the story comes out of them, it's a relief. But they need that safe space to actually speak and to be seen to be heard. But the most important thing is that it needs to be heard. No, it needs to come out of you. You need to say it. You need to listen to it as well.
But you're right. It also needs to be heard and acknowledged.
Yes.
Because you can go out in the woods and share your story with a tree, but it's different when you have somebody who really hears you and says, yes, that must have hurt. Tell me more. I want to hear more.
I think people underestimate the destruction of intergenerational trauma and the fact that unless it's spoken, unless it's heard, all it does is multiply within the people around you, because your energy spreads it out, your hurt spreads it out to your family, to your children, to the next generation. So I think more people are understanding the concept of intergenerational trauma and the need for a space for these to be heard. so that it doesn't carry on damaging the world to come.
Absolutely. And there's been research that's been done on this. Tirtha Firestone talks about this in her book, From Wounds to Wisdom, about the research done to show that something that happened to the parent, the grandparents even, affects the grandchildren and their behavior and their fears. And so somewhere, somebody needs to intervene. There needs to be interventions. And that's why we're creating this army of healers. And the idea of the army of healers is just to create spaces all over the country, as many spaces as possible for Arabs and Jews, Israelis and Palestinians to meet and listen to one another and feel together and connect and hear each other's stories and even move together, dance together, feel life together, feel the life that is within them, uniting their humanity.
That's very important. I've also interviewed Robbie Dublin. You must know Robbie, who was the American. She came together with a Palestinian woman who also lost family members. And even coming together and acknowledging each other's pain and being there for each other's pain is exactly that, listening to someone else and then stepping back and getting the other person to listen and understand that a lot of the time what you experienced means you're not alone. Yeah. So a lot of the time the pain is, I think it's only happening to me and it makes me feel worse. But when I say it and when I hear other people in similar situations, I realize that, no, it wasn't okay, but I'm not alone.
Yeah.
So it's easier to reach out. So tell me about your organization, because I really find it fascinating that in this particular 2024, with what happened on October the 7th, although when this conflict started is, depends on who you're asking. And I think you agree with that. It didn't start on October the 7th. It just escalated on October. There was a spark on October the 7th that brought out other things. But
I have a lot to say about this conflict and what's going on right now in Israel and Gaza. There's one word that some people don't like to hear, but it's called complexity.
Absolutely.
It's very complex, and there's many different sides to it. And we have to be willing to look at this complexity and see it, because that's the only way we can come out of it. So, but since October 8th, we started creating spaces for people to feel their pain. I remember in one of the first, at first we met separately, because
a start at the beginning, your organization was established in 2003.
No, that's right. And even we started way before that. But I'm talking about the Army of Healers, yes, which is a program in our organization.
Okay.
And how it evolved. So like October 8th, we're like seeing this is huge. What's just happened is huge. October 9th, October 10th, people are just feeling like, we don't know what is this, what just happened. And both sides are feeling fear, feeling grief. And at first we said, we're not going to sit in the same spaces together at first, because people are in so much grief. And when we're together, sometimes we feel like we need to be careful, so we don't hurt the other person's feelings. We can't share all our pain. We can't really get angry. We can't. And we welcome all these feelings as long as they're not behaviors towards another person, as long as they're just acknowledged, this is how I feel. So we met separately in the beginning. And I remember one workshop, this man came from the Jewish communities near Gaza. And when we divided them into small groups, all he wanted to do was to lie down on the earth. His group surrounded him. He laid down face down on the earth and just let the earth hold him. It was too much. What he had seen and what he felt, it was too much for him to hold. He felt like only the earth or a group in the middle of a group of people can hold so much pain. And so I still have that picture. And I think this is the feeling of so many of us on both sides. It's too much pain for one person to hold. We need a community.
Exactly. You need your tribe around you.
And right now, in the past 4 or 5 months, we've been meeting together, Arabs and Jews, Israelis and Palestinians, in different settings. And it's been difficult and it's been amazing.
And how easy was it to bring together? How much time did it take you to move from doing it mono communally or to bring people together?
I think it took us like 3 months until we kind of got ourselves to really meet and begin bringing up everything. We invited people to share what they're really going through. And it's not easy. I've heard in things in my groups that were hard to listen to. But as you said, the stories, once they're shared, there's a feeling of relief.
Absolutely.
People can let go of it a little bit and then they can listen to the other side. But as long as nobody listens to us and as long as nobody sees us, we feel like we have to hold on to this. It's like...
No, I agree. If no one's listening to you, you hold on to it tighter because it's mine. It's important. It's me. So unless, okay. Tell me that's a side within what you're doing. How much effect does the news play, the social media? Because I know there's a lot of conflicting reports on social media. I'm on social media a lot, and I get so traumatized by what I read online or what I see online. And also not separating the truth from the fake. Does it affect the work that you do? Or am I on a different wavelength now?
No, you're not on a different wavelength. For me, it's been very eye-opening since October 7th. Because before October 7th, mostly what I felt was guilt about the way Israel was behaving towards the Palestinians. And after October 7th, I still feel terrible about what's happening in Gaza. But I realized there's another player in this game. And I'm not talking about Russia, China, Iran, and all that. I realized that the extreme Islam is a very, very dangerous player in this game. It's not even a game.
In this context.
Mm-hmm.
In this context.
Yes, and that we need to see this. We need to see that for 16 years, all they've been doing is building tunnels instead of creating a beautiful space, a beautiful place in Gaza. With all the money that they've received, they've been creating tunnels and amassing weapons. And those weapons arrived from somewhere. They arrived from Egypt, there's a lot of players in this game. And we cannot close our eyes to see that.
No, I agree with you.
At because least I can't.
No, I agree with you because I've always been, I mean, I've got a master's in international relations, international law, and my dissertation was on wars of national liberation, legal or legitimate under modern international law, a case study for Palestine. And despite being pro-Palestinian, I cannot deny the fact that money's played a part. It's a power play. It's there's the branch that doesn't want to see an Israel exist. There's a branch that just wants to keep imbalance within the situation. They're not interested in peace for either community. They're just interested in creating an imbalance because imbalance means the arms will be sold. Imbalance means there's the possibility of bringing in whether it's the extreme Zionist or the extreme Islamist. So to me, it's, as you said, complexity is the name of this context because it's not black and white. It's not good guy and bad guy. It's not just Palestinian and Israeli. There are so many, it's so multidimensional. It's scary because where do you start?
Yeah. My answer to this is that each of us has to do our part. Each of us has to do our part to make the world better. And if we actually did, instead of just reacting to the situation and feeling bad about it, if we each did like you're doing, or, you know, like so many people are doing, because on the global level, I'm not sure how to resolve this.
I agree.
I don't have an answer right now.
So tell me, for your army of healers, how are you training them? What training are you giving them?
Most of them are trained facilitators. They've trained not with us. They've had intensive training. Some are therapists. So most of them have that. We train them in our approach, Together Beyond Words approach, of really creating places where people connect to their emotions through the body and then listen to one another in a way that is so unique and so healing. So we teach them that piece. And we also have a playback theater ensemble. So our facilitators of the playback theater teach them something. And then we also teach them some about how to stay in their leadership when faced with really intense emotions, because there's intense emotions on both sides that can lead to violence. But how can you stay in the kind of leadership that can intervene in ways that bring more healing to a situation like that? So that's the kind of thing we teach when we work with our facilitators.
And what do you plan? What is the design for going further with these facilitators, with your army of healers? I love that word.
Thank you. Yes, there's been many reactions to that name. But we would like to open this year 60 spaces, places of healing across the country, where our facilitators work with groups for 10 meetings and teach them the approach and give them the space and help them connect to one another and listen to each other's stories. So that's our goal for 2024, creating 60 such places. And hopefully we'll have the funding to continue and creating more and more such places. We feel like this is maybe the most important, but it's such an important work for the whole world. Because so much being done in the world to destroy the world, to destroy other people, comes from a place of pain. And so for the future of the planet, for the future of the people, we need to have spaces of compassion and connection and healing. And I know it's not the same as going on out and protesting, but even when you go out and protest, when you go out and protest and try to create change in the public sphere, and you are in a coming from a place of confidence and compassion.
And compassion.
And authenticity and courage and of with an ability to see the other, you're going to be much more effective. And so that's what we were trying to do.
Tell me, because I think we jumped a bit. So you said you brought together Palestinian, Arab, Jewish, Israeli people to speak about the pain together after October the 7th.
Yes.
When they came together, how easy was it to get them to speak safely or feel safe? I think that's the most important feeling you need to feel when you step into space that the other is.
Yes, it's very important. The first question we begin is, what do you need to feel safe in this space? One. And people say different things. And then we say, thank you for sharing that. And we'll try to make this as safe as possible. But know that you might be triggered. People are going to say things that might trigger you. And then what we ask you to do is be with the parts of you that are being triggered. Just spend some time with them. And let them know you see them and that you yourself see that they're being triggered and that you're going to speak for them when it's your turn to speak. Because everybody is going to get a turn to speak and then everybody is going to get a turn to speak again. And we each share as many times as is needed. We each share for 3, 4, or 5 minutes and then move to the next person and we don't interrupt each other. We just share our story, our pain, our feelings, and then move to the next person and the next person and the next person. And slowly something happens that is just beautiful. So that's one of the things. It's very important to people know that it's not going to be a triggerless environment.
Exactly.
It's not going to be a politically correct. Everybody has to watch out.
Watch their words.
Yeah, no. People are going to speak their truth. That's what we're inviting. And it may hurt your feelings at some point. But then it's going to be your turn to share. And we really trust that each person has an essence. In IFS, it's called self. An essence of compassion and confidence and connection that is there all the time. And there's parts that are really upset and parts that are really angry, and we need to let those parts speak.
Yes, we do. Because if they stay within us, they make you sick, truly make you sick.
Or they make you behave in ways that are hurtful.
Yep. So they need to be externalized for your safety or for your health and for the safety of the people around you. Okay. I think you're very ambitious to be doing what you're doing now, but I also think the timing is perfect because I think even if you don't just look at Israel, Palestine, you look at the world around, there's conflict everywhere. There's conflict everywhere. We've got to start somewhere to actually understanding that this making people heard, like giving spaces to people to be heard, really heard, is very, very important. People need to be heard. They need to be telling their truth. I just came from a conference in Albania, bringing together women's NGOs from conflict areas.
Mm.
And when we're talking about this, because it's women from Palestine, Yemen, Afghanistan, Myanmar, in a lot of places in Africa, but because of what's happening in the Ukraine, in Israel, Palestine, a lot of the time That's what's in the discussions at the table. And there are a lot of forgotten conflicts. And I, after discussion with some of my friends, colleagues, some co-peace builders, I did an open mic event, half an hour, and I gave the opportunity to five women from five different areas in 3 minutes to tell people what they wanted the world to hear. Myanmar, India, Iraq, South Sudan, and Brazil. And it was quite spontaneous, and it could have been organized better, but that's irrelevant. But what the best part of it was that these five women came to me afterwards and said, thank you for the opportunity to speak. And to me, that was the biggest gift of all, because they do, I mean, there's so much you can discuss during a conflict, and this conflict in Palestine and Gaza is actually overwhelming for a lot of reasons. So a lot of people don't get hurt, yet similar things are happening elsewhere. So this gift of these five women coming to me and saying to me, Magda, thank you for giving me the opportunity to speak my truth, was so precious, I cannot tell you.
Beautiful. That's beautiful.
So tell me, where are you with the, at what stage are you with your army of healers? What can we expect from you? Or what can, no, that's the wrong word to say. What are you hoping to achieve within 2024? You want to do the 60 outlets, the 60.
Yes. So we began with our 10 pilot groups. We're doing before and after questionnaires and interviews to see how it's going, how the different groups and meetings, how it's affecting people, how it's changing their minds and feelings. So we want it to be documented. We want people to know. So that's what we've been doing so far. Towards the end of the summer, we have another two or three day preparation for starting all the groups starting September. And we're just hoping to be able to continue this. We know from so far of what we've heard from the groups that really deep connections have been made, and people have change the way they feel about the situation, about the war, which, as you know, there's within Israel, there's 20% Palestinians in Israel, living in Israel, with as part of the population, voting in the elections, they're part of the Knesset. And there's a lot of discomfort now. There's a lot of mistrust. So just building those bridges right now amongst us, I mean, we're neighbors, is very, very important. So that's what so far has happened. And we're looking towards the new groups that are going to start and the preparation and doing the final assessment of what happened and learning from it. So,
well, dude, I was within a group. I'm part of the Mediterranean Women Mediators Network, and we've got Palestinian members and Israeli members. And the gist of what the Israeli woman, because each were given a platform at separate events to speak their truth and be heard. And the Israeli woman said, and I think it's something that will remain with me and is a truth, is that there's a lot of reassessment within Israel itself, and the Israel of October the 6th is not going to be the Israel that comes out of this conflict, and it's going to be a good difference. There's a shift within Israel itself. I can't give you details, but she says there's a shift within the Israeli population. Good and bad, but there's a shift, and it's going to come out on the other side in a good way. So I hope she's right. I want to believe she's right, because I'm seeing a people. And I think this has got to do with what social media does. Social media tends to fanaticize people. It tends to unbalance things. But I also think you don't see the whole picture of social media. And I want to believe that what she says is true, because I do think that what Mr. Netanyahu was doing before October 7 is something that needs to be dealt with.
Yes.
Beyond the survival of the Israeli state, But what he was doing personally and as an institution needs to be dealt with in the courts. I think the Israelis deserve a better president, prime minister.
So I'll say a couple of things about that. First of all, social media. So you see the settlers and what they're doing to the Palestinians in the West Bank, Palestine occupied territories, however you refer to that, and it's awful. What you don't see is that organization like Roots, who are doing projects for settlers and Palestinians together, and that's pretty powerful work that they're doing. So that you don't see the horror of what, the settlers and the whole situation there is terrible, and that's what I'm hearing from my friends. So that's one thing. As far as Netanyahu, he needs to go. He needs
absolutely.
But as far as the courts, first of all, he's in court now. He's undergoing trial. And they've not been able to prove what they thought they were going to be able to prove about him. So the whole thing about him extending the war so he wouldn't have to go to trial, I think, is a little
bit... It's a myth. Is it a myth?
It's not a myth, but it's not exactly true. It's that complexity thing. I think he wants to win the war. He doesn't want to be remembered as the person who got Israel into this horrible, horrible mess and then left her there. He wants to win the war. He wants something to come out as a hero from this.
He wants a better legacy. He wants a better legacy, and it's not going to happen. I agree.
It's not going to happen. He needs to be out, and many of the heads of the military need to be out because they're responsible for Israel not being prepared on October 7th.
So, absolutely. I think that's one of the biggest questions that no one's ever asked, and possibly the Israeli government doesn't want to happen, is how was Israel caught so off guard on October the 7th? But that's
a whole new discussion.
That's a whole new discussion. And at this stage, it's irrelevant because things need to settle. People are dying. There's a lot of, and where did I read it? We're not talking about post-traumatic stress disorder because this is not post. This is real traumatic stress disorder because it's continuous. People
are
living it.
There's no post yet. Yes. There's no post. Not in Gaza, not in Israel. There's no post.
But even us watching it on social media, we're experiencing similar things because you're seeing the violence you're seeing online is very traumatic. And my friend says, I spoke to a friend the other day and I was hyped up and she said, Magda, take five. You need a bit of debriefing. Step back, breathe. Because I think we get overloaded. So I think the whole world is suffering from real traumatic stress disorder. So,
That's why we need an army of healers all over
absolutely.
The world.
Absolutely. I think that's the perfect way to end this conversation, that I think your timing of an army of peace builders or healers is, the timing is perfect. I would be interested to know going forward how it works and to hear from you and maybe spread the word and maybe spread it to the practice and take your army of healers. To other parts of the world. But let's get it working in Israel first, because I think the Middle East is the heart of a lot of the problems.
Yes.
It's a bigger area. So I'm wishing you luck. And I also have to tell you, I have a niece who's also does work with dance therapy. And I've sent her your details. You never know. I sent her your website and I said, let me know if you would be interested. But she does a lot of work with refugees.
Wow.
And dance. So you might be getting a call from her as well, because I think that's also the name of the game. Connecting similar-minded people.
Yes.
Because this army needs to go global.
Yes. Yes. And by the way, we have 70 IFS therapists in the United States who are working with our facilitators to support them and they're volunteering their time to work with the facilitators. So the facilitators, when they begin a group, can come from a place where they have space to listen and to hear everything they're going to hear. So that's a beautiful initiative that these 70 therapists have come and stepped forward to help.
That's great to hear. But that's, as I said, it's the name of the game. We've actually got to support each other. This is global. It's actually community, and the community just gets, I don't like the word global. It's a community, and the community just needs to keep on getting bigger and spreading.
Yes.
Okay, Netsana, it was lovely speaking to you. I'm really glad I reached out to you.
Thank you.
Is there anything you want to say before we close?
I want to ask everyone around the world who's seeing all these things on the social media and having lots of reactions, please begin by feeling what is yours to feel. By feeling what is yours to feel, why are you so triggered? What is really going on for you before you react, before you go out and write a post, before you go out to protest? See where this is taking you truthfully. And if you need, get support to see that. Because healed people can heal people. And when you're hurt, you're hurting other people when you're feeling pain. And so, yeah, that's what I want to say.
Yeah, that's a lovely note to end on. Heal yourself. And I like that. Don't react to situation. Step back and say, why is this upsetting me? Why is this triggering me? And yeah, then you need to do.
Yeah.
Anyway, thank you very much. This has been quite a healing conversation for me as well. I look forward to hearing from you going forward. And I will, when I upload this podcast, I will also put your website so people can reach out if they need to. But wishing you lots of strength and energy in creating your army of healers.
Thank you. And there's also a Facebook page for the Army of Healers that I can send you.
Yes, please. And I would like you to send me 2 or 3 nice photographs of yourself. Yourself or of the group that I need to add.
Okay, great.
Okay. Thank you, Netsana, and have a lovely rest of the day. And considering where you live, please stay safe.
Oh, thank you.
And to the listeners, thank you for being with us.
And thank you for the work you're doing, Magda. Thank you.
We all really need to reach out together. As I said, it's a community that just needs to get bigger. And we all put our little piece of the puzzle in different ways.
Yes.
So thank you. And stay safe, as I said, please.
Okay.
Thank you.
The first trilingual podcast station of Cyprus, Island Talks. Open, diverse, free.